5, 4,
you are on
3.
Now.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hello, everybody. It's Lee Milt here, your productivity and mindset coach. I'm very excited today. We're going to talk about a subject that is without doubt one of the most important subjects for success for all entrepreneurs and business owners, and that is about sales. And we're also going to talk about truly one of the hardest things for us, and that is getting really good salespeople. And by popular demand, we have had people request our expert celebrity author today, and that is Mr. Steve Clark. But first, let me just give you a little bit of information about why it's important to listen to this call today. Sales, without doubt, is the most misunderstood profession in our society. It is disrespected in the media. It is made fun of in Hollywood. It is the butt of jokes at cocktail party and late night talk shows. Yet, the truth is, it is the big engine that drives our entire free enterprise system. And it has been said by many learned individuals that truly nothing happens in business until someone sells something. So, everything you own or will ever own had to be sold by someone. So whether it's the smart, fancy phone, the iPad, the clothes you wear, the car you drive, the home you live in, they had to be sold by someone. And so whether you embrace sales or not, you got to understand this, and this is important. Everybody is in sales. That means you, your receptionist, the people who do books at your office, everybody in your office is in sales. So think about this. Parents who are trying to convince their kids to clean their room or do well in school are truly just selling their values and ideas. Or teachers who are encouraging students to study and do their homework are really, again, just selling concepts. Employers who are trying to extract more productivity behavior from their vendors or their employees are, again, using the technique of sales. So, by the way, if you've ever had a date or you've been married, you are definitely in sales. So the question is not whether you're in sales, but the real question is, how good are you going to be at it? So again, today I have the fantastic sales expert, Mr. Steve Clark, who has been with us at this program several times. He is also a faculty of the Millionaire Smarts program. So if you each month go to our membership site, you can find him there. And he's going to share with us the magnificent seven characteristics of sales superstars. And I truly encourage you to listen to this program several times and maybe write notes down and embrace the idea that sales is the ticket for success. And Steve is going to present information today so you and your staff can sell more easily. But let me give you a little bit more information about Steve. I've known Steve for a long time. In 1996, he has consulted, coached, and mentored hundreds of small business owners whose sales exceed $500 million annually. He is a self-taught salesperson who has literally read hundreds of sales, management, and psychology books, and like myself, listened to thousands of hours of audio recordings, attended scores of sales seminars. And I think the real thing that sets Steve apart is that he has made over 10,000 face-to-face or telephone prospecting calls. So this is not a guy who just teaches it because he can't do it. This is a guy who teaches it because he knows how to do it. He is the author of Profitable Persuasion, Proven Strategies for Sales and Management Success, and the co-author of Peak Performers and the Ultimate Sales Secret. He is the CEO of New School Selling, and he heads an international business development and marketing firm that consults and coaches thousands of sales executives and business owners in the United States, Canada, and Australia. He, in 2011, competed against 25,000 marketers and won the Marketing Campaign of the Year Award from GKIC Super Conference in Chicago. He is a prolific writer. He is an international speaker, and he ranks in the top 3% of all sales and marketing professionals worldwide. He is also not only a CEO, but a licensed U.S. Coast Guard captain who likes to sport fish out of Florida. So, welcome Captain Steve Clark. How are you doing, Steve?
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here, Lee. I appreciate you having me.
Well, we'd love to have you. As you know, we're talking about the seven major characteristics of sales superstars. But before we get in this interview, if you would just briefly tell us about your sales journey, how you got into sales, just, you know, a couple of the struggles you've had, and ultimately, what were some of the secrets that made you successful?
Okay. I've been doing this now a little bit over 30 years. So I'm into my into my fourth decade of sales. I got into sales on November 24th, 1980. That was my 30th birthday. So if you're good at math, you can figure out real fast how long I've been doing it.
And you're not ashamed to tell you those dates. Okay.
No, exactly. Well, you know, maybe I was a slow learner, but it took me a while to figure it out. But, you know, I got into sales simply because I had been actually working in state government for a while, and I realized that there was no future in that, and I decided that I was tired of making basically a subsistence wage, and I decided that I was going to try my skills into the marketplace where I could earn exactly what I was worth. And for the first 2 years of my career, I did exactly that, and I almost starved to death. So it was a very long struggle. I wasn't very good at it. I realized very quickly that I needed to really get good and study. And I started on a journey that's never stopped in terms of learning and growing about selling, about human behavior, about what makes people do what they do and how can I get them basically to do what I want them to do, which is to trade me their money for whatever it is that I'm selling. Along the way, a few years into it, I was actually fired from a sales job for poor performance. I had been in sales several years, and I just wasn't getting the job done, and I got fired, and it was really a wake-up call for me. In the sense that I had to decide, was I going to get into the sales business or was I going to get out? Because having one foot in and one foot out and not being totally sold out to being a consummate sales professional, if I wasn't going to do that, then I needed to get out. And if I insisted on sort of straddling the fence, it wasn't going to be a very happy experience for me. So I made that commitment. I recommitted, if you will, sort of like somebody who recommits. You know, they make a commitment, then they fall off the wagon, and then they have to recommit. That's sort of what I did. And along the way, I've had a number of sales jobs. I've sold everything from vitamins and laundry detergents and security systems. I had an insurance license and a mutual fund license, so I sold insurance. Stocks and bonds, health insurance, all kinds of different things. I worked for a company for about 8 years doing fundraising in the panhandle of Florida, where I raised $1 million for schools in this area. And I did all of that for about 16 years. And then in 1996, I decided that I really was tired of splitting my commission with someone in the sense of the company, and I decided that I was going to go whole hog and go into business for myself. So in 1996, I hung out my shingle. I had zero clients, zero income. I had two pre-teenage daughters, and I jumped into the world of sales training and consulting, and sort of the rest of it is history, they say, because in the first 12 months that I was in that business on my own, I doubled my income. And then the next year I doubled that income again, and then the following year I increased it 50%. So from the time I went into business, 3 years later I'd increased my income some 700%.
Wow, that's amazing.
Well, that's not bragging. Here's what I'd like everybody to take away from that. No matter where you are right now, you know, I'd been doing it for 16 years. You know, I was doing okay. I wasn't doing great, but I was doing okay. I was able to pay the bills and support my family. But once I really made the decision that I was going to go to the next level, it did not take very long for me to double and triple my income. What took a long time was the 16 years of making a decision to do that. And I think the takeaway for everybody here is everybody listening to this call can double or triple their sales production in the next 12 to 24 months if they will just make a commitment and embrace the idea that they're going to get really good at sales.
Well, you know, I'm so happy that you've said that, because that is kind of a theme this year that I've noticed about most of us, is that we really do have to recommit to our core values and our core decision of success, and not just go, not be in rote, not be on automatic, not just do the busy work stuff, but to really get down to what's important. And really what's important is, you know, how much are we selling every day? Because the only way we can be successful is we cannot support our staff, we cannot support our family, we cannot support the goals that we have unless we are actually selling things. And Steve, you knew I wrote a book called Spiritual Power Tools for Successful Selling, and I always tell people, if you have fear of selling, you know, the real point of selling is to be of service, is to be providing people with the services and products that they need to make them better people or to help their business. And so thank you so much for that. If I could, I want to go ahead and start getting you some questions.
Sure.
So one of my basic questions is you know, and this is the big debate about leadership and salespeople. So are salespeople born or are they made?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, and I heard someone ask John Maxwell that recently. I heard him speak, and they asked him the question, and he kind of smiled and he chuckled, and he said, well, they asked him that about a writer. Are writers born or made? And he kind of chuckled, and he said, you know, everyone I've ever met that was a writer was actually born sometime.
That's funny.
It was funny. That's everybody funny. Broke up saying that. Yeah, and he said, let's rephrase the question. Are some people naturally gifted and others not naturally gifted? And you know, the answer there is that, yes, some people may have a predisposition because of their programming, and we'll get into those things in a few minutes about what some of those things are. But ultimately, everyone who is in sales has to learn how to sell. You don't come into this world knowing how to sell. It's a skill that has to be developed. And everyone can learn how to sell, but for some people, it may be easier for them to learn how to do it because of a natural predisposition they have that they acquired during their early formative years, but particularly, you know, before they ever actually entered first grade.
Yes, I totally agree with that. I know that my father said no to everything, and that in my environment I learned very early in life to become someone who could persuade, influence, and plead my point at a very, very young age. So sales was a natural progression for me. So with that said, do you think anyone who is working with us can be a super salesperson?
Well, again, I want to go back to you know, some people are going to have it easier, and it's going to be easier for some folks. And I don't think anyone can become a what I call a sales superstar no more than anyone can become an NFL quarterback. However, everyone listening to this can be better than they are by a multiple And by that, I mean everyone listening to this can be two or three or four times better than they currently are. And I think that really should be the question is, can I double, can I be twice as effective as I am at this thing called sales? And for most people, if they could increase their production two or three times greater than what they're already doing, that would be a monumental success for them. So I'm not so sure we need to, you know, just focus on do I have the ability to be a superstar or not? But the question is, if I'm selling, is there a way that I can double or triple what I'm already doing? And if you are in sales, if you're someone listening to this and you are the salesperson, if you're a consultant, if you're a business owner, if you're a coach, and you're the one having to do the selling, I wouldn't worry so much about how you compare to other people who are in sales. What I would say is look at what you're doing and ask yourself, what would my life be like if I could double or triple my income that I'm currently getting from trying to sell the services that I offer? Now, if you're hiring salespeople, that's a little bit of a different matter, because I think you want to be a little bit more selective and then go about hiring those people who will have a better chance of becoming a sales superstar than those who would not. And we're going to touch on those characteristics here in a few minutes.
Okay. So let's just get right into, let's talk about the seven magnificent characteristics of a sales superstar, knowing that, you know, not everyone listening is going to really try to be that, but we can all try to be better.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think what as we go through these and talk about these seven characteristics, I think what everyone listening to this wants to do is ask themselves, number one, how do I rate? Where am I currently in this particular characteristic? And can I get better, or how can I get better at doing this? Now, as I list these, I want to preface it by saying the things I'm going to talk about are not what people might would typically think as selling skills, like asking better questions or doing a better job of closing or something like that. Those are things that can be trained in sales training. The things I'm going to mention are the hardwired programming skills, personal talents and skills that basically we acquired unconsciously from our formative years, primarily from parents and other significant adults before we actually became 6 or 7 years old. So here's the first one: personal responsibility. Now, I think it's important. Everybody has their own definition of what personal responsibility is, but let me give you the definition we use for that. It's a capacity to take responsibility for one's actions, conduct, obligations, and decisions without excuses. So if we're looking at a continuum, on one end of the continuum would be excuses. The other one would be accepting personal responsibility. The sales superstar does not accept excuses for their lack of performance. They don't blame poor performance on the economy, the interest rates, the fact that their competitors are lowballing their prices. They just don't make excuses. They look in the mirror and say, hey, the only reason I'm not doing better is because I'm not skillful enough to close more deals. That being the case, I need to go to work on improving my skills. So personal responsibility is absolutely number one, and I'm going to give you these in order of importance. And anytime, Lee, you want to jump in here, comment, or ask another question in response to that, just go ahead.
Okay. Well,
go ahead.
I really like the whole thing about the personal responsibility, because, you know, that really is across the board for everything. You know, our real job in life is not just the checklist. It's reading in between the lines, and, you know, being very visionary about what we want in our life and aiming our mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual and financial energy towards that. So, you know, I really like when you said it's that personal responsibility, because, you know, that's what this entire coaching program is really about, is the mindset and the personal responsibility that you have to take the initiative and also to implement and, you know, to truly map out your own reality, not just let reality happen to you. So thank you.
You're welcome. And as we go through these, one of the things you'll find is, as we check these things off here, is these are not only skills that are required for to become a sales superstar, they're skills that are necessary for to be a superstar at anything. So
yes.
The second one is resilience. And the definition that we like to use for resilience is the ability to recover from adversity, or, you know, to recover quickly. And, you know, we all experience failure in life. In the world of sales, we experience on a daily basis a different outcome than what we would like. Now, some people may say that's failure. I don't think that when you attempt to make a sale and you don't make the sale, I don't label that as failure. What I label it as is you just did not get the intended outcome that you would like to get. Now, that happens a lot in sales. In fact, it happens more times than not. If you talk to 10 people and give 10 proposals or presentations, most people are going to get more no's than yeses. And in sales, you probably will get more no's than yeses. Certainly early on, you'll get more no's than yeses. Once you get really good at it, that won't be the case. You'll get, you know, 70, 80% yeses. But in the beginning, until you get really skilled about it, you're going to be batting, you know, maybe 50% or less. So the issue for becoming a sales superstar is getting over this idea that you didn't get your result that you wanted, not feeling sorry for yourself, going to the curb, sitting on the curb, sucking your thumb, and playing poor pitiful me. The only acceptable response when someone tells you no, the next words out of your mouth should be next. That's it. It's, you know, that one's done. Drop the curtain, move on to the next one. The quicker you can do that and get to the next one, the better. And you don't want to waste any energy dealing with the fact that you didn't get the one that you just finished talking to. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't debrief and go back and replay what happened so that you can learn from it. But you don't get sidetracked and depressed and let it ruin your day.
Okay, but you're not speaking of that just because someone gave you a no in the sales presentation that you just give up. You're just saying after you've done your absolute best job at that appointment or at that event, right?
Absolutely. Once you've done your very best job, if you didn't get what you were looking for, use it as a lesson learned, but don't let it deter you from your ultimate goal that you have in mind and what you're trying to accomplish. You just learn from it and move on to the next one.
Thank you. Good advice.
Okay. Number three is self-starting. And the definition that we like to really use in self-starting is that self-starting is the ability to get up and be able to do what you need to do and do it when you need to do it, in order to accomplish what it is that you're trying to accomplish. So it really falls into being able to initiate tasks in order to fill commitments and responsibilities. And the opposite of self-starting is when someone has to wake you up every morning with a hot poker and stick it in your back to get you up and moving. There's an old joke about a mother going in and waking her son up and telling him he had to get ready to go to school. And he didn't get up, and 15 minutes later she came back in and did it again. And finally he said, "Why do I have to get up and go to school?" She said, "Because you're 40 years old and you're the principal." So there's...
You know, okay, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, exactly. So I've met a lot of people who were in sales who needed someone every day to wind them up and get them excited and motivate them to get them out the door to go do what they needed to do to be successful. superstar salespeople don't need other people to motivate them to go do what they need to do. They're capable of directing themselves. They're capable of getting themselves up and getting themselves moving in order to accomplish what it is that they want to accomplish. And as we talk about all these things are all measurable. We can measure these things on a bell-shaped curve and find out where people fit in this based on the normal population. So every one of these is measurable. And it's a very scientific process to figure out where someone stacks up on this. And it's, you know, when we measure people, sometimes it's not necessarily pretty, but at least we find out the truth of where they are in relationship to the rest of the population.
And Steve, if I may, one of the things all of us business owners have to really accept is if we have people that we are having to prod and motivate, you know, to do stuff like that, you know, it's such a drain on us physically, emotionally, and, you know, mentally, that ultimately we have to let them go and find the people who are self-motivated, right?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, first of all, it's a lost cause. And secondly, like you said, it just robs us of our energy that we need for other things. And I accepted a long time ago that there was only one person that I had any control over, and that was myself. And that was a full-time job, and I didn't have the time or energy to try and do that for anybody else. And if I find somebody like that, then I'm like, I got the wrong person. I need to go find somebody who can get themselves up and moving. Now, that's not to say that they wouldn't need my help and coaching and things like that, but they need to be able to get themselves up and moving because I don't have the time or energy to do that for anybody except myself.
And, you know, I just got back from a big event that was all about sales, and one of the things I heard from business owners was, you know I need to get rid of this particular salesperson or this person, the staff person, but, you know, it's so arduous to replace them, and it's so exhausting, and I keep procrastinating. And my comment to them was, well, every day you're procrastinating about that, unfortunately, it's costing you loss of sales and loss of income. So we have to just get truthful with ourselves that, you know, as you just said, it's a lost cause. You cannot make people be motivated if they don't want to be motivated.
Absolutely, and I find that business owners are reluctant to do that. Many of them don't want to deal with the reality that they have. They just play the hope game and hope that it's going to get better. It's never going to get any better. It is what it is, and the way I like to refer to it is, if you had cancer, would you wait to do anything about it, and would you just hope that it got better, or would you seek immediate medical attention for that? And, of course, the answer is people would do something about it. Well, when you have a cancer in your business, then you need to do the same thing. Otherwise, it's going to fester. It's going to get worse. And the bad part about that is it's going to affect everybody else. The thing is, it's going to spread. But I understand the hesitancy and reluctance of business owners to do that, but it doesn't make any sense whatsoever because nothing is ever going to change until the business owner decides to, you know, grab the bull by the horns and make those changes.
I just fired a vendor not too long ago, and I started the letter off with, hope is not a good business strategy for me. And
exactly.
That I've been hoping you would get better for the last year, and you have not, so I have no choice but to let you go.
Yeah, I mean, somebody says to me, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that I just believe that hope is a very, very, very bad business strategy.
Oh, no doubt. And I think, you know, when a business owner says to me, I've been telling this salesperson, I tell them over and over again what they need to be doing. And I've told them 100 times what they need to do in order to bring in more business. And my response to them is, that's about 99 more times than you need to tell them. If you got to tell them more than once or twice, then you got the wrong person. And then the next question I have for them is, so let me ask you this. When did you come to the realization that you hired the wrong person? And they're like, you know, and they have a hard time with that. But that's a whole different subject. But the business owner is no different here than the salesperson as far as that's concerned if they don't want to do something about it.
Exactly.
Number four is self-management. Now, self-management is the ability to prioritize and complete tasks in order to deliver desired outcomes within allotted time frames. So think about that one for a second. Key words there, prioritize task and complete the task in order to deliver the desired outcome within a time frame. So the really superstar salesperson is able to identify what needs to be done and what order does it need to be done and when does it need to be done in order for me to get the result that I want to get. So there's several things there that that are required in order for someone to manage their own behavior, because ultimately it's about managing your own behavior. And the difference between successful salespeople and unsuccessful salespeople is that successful salespeople do the behaviors that are necessary for sales success. Bottom line is they do the behaviors that are necessary for sales success. The unsuccessful salesperson doesn't do the behaviors that are necessary for success. Now, neither salesperson may like doing the behaviors that are necessary for success. But the sales superstar, the successful salesperson, understands this is what I need to do, this is when I need to do it, and it doesn't matter if I like to do it or not. The unsuccessful salesperson wants to always negotiate the price of doing what is necessary. And, you know, the folks that are listening to this and you've heard this that are familiar with Dan Kennedy, he talks about behavioral congruence. And if you want to make $100,000 worth a year in sales or $1 million a year in sales, you must do the behavior that people who make $1 million a year do. You're not going to get there without doing that behavior. It's just absolutely a bottom line. So successful people are able to do that and manage themselves, their time, their energy, and everything to accomplish that desired result. Unsuccessful salespeople or mediocre salesperson aren't very good at managing their own behavior. Number five is results orientation. And the results orientation is the ability to clearly and objectively understand and implement all the variables necessary to obtain the defined or desired result. Again, you know, they have a clear laser-like focus on what result they want, and then they're able to clearly and objectively implement with all the things going on in their life those things necessary to produce the desired result. I like to think of this as they are laser-like focused. I had a conversation with my daughter last night. She's 31. She's a financial services specialist at a bank. And she, like a lot of successful people in that business, she has an obsessive, compulsive nature about her. And she was saying to me, "Dad, the other people at work don't understand my intensity and my focus for wanting to make money." And I said to her, "Don't ever expect that most of them are going to understand that at all, because that's not where they are." I said the laser-like, the pinpoint focus, the, you know, being absolutely crystal clear about what you want, and then engaging in those behaviors that produce that result with the constant mindset of keeping the end result clearly in your mind. I said that's not something that a lot of people are very good at. Most people have ill-defined outcomes. Their focus is not very clear. If you ask most business owners what they want their business to do next year, most of them will say something like, "I'd like to make more money," or "We'd like to make more sales," or "have more clients." But they aren't real specific about what that is. When you ask a superstar salesperson what results they want to accomplish next quarter, they can rattle it off to you. I want to get 27 referrals. I want to have $104 per contact and so forth and so on. They're very clear about the results that they want, and then they work backwards from there to make sure that they do those things that are going to produce that desired outcome. But they're not out there, as Zig Ziglar says, being a professional visitor. They're out there to get money from folks. They're not out there just to have a good time and go through the motions.
You've hit upon something that is so prevalent in our society today, Steve, of that there's this whole, and you and I have talked about this a little before, there's this whole movement of, you know, life should operate without focusing on money. And yet money, we can't pay salaries, we can't pay our rent, we can't, you know, support ourselves without money. And society has this general look down your nose that you're not supposed to talk about money. But there's this thing called fair exchange for value that I like to believe in, and that when I provide great value for someone else, there has to be a fair exchange for that. And I just want everybody to really be aware of the fact that you've got to start looking at yourself, the way that you talk about money as the business owner, and you think about money and what you allow your staff to say about money. Years ago, I had someone who said in my office, you know, it's very stressful that all we do is focus in on money. Well, I had to let that person go, because if that person did not understand that we have to earn money to keep going. So any additional thoughts about, you know, that mindset of, you know, we shouldn't be talking and thinking about money?
Well, I think in certain professions that's not important. If you're a social worker, and
right.
I used to be in that business, and I have a daughter in that business, if that's your calling in life is to be a social worker, then your focus is not primarily about money. It's providing the social work things that you do. But as I've had this conversation with my younger daughter about that, I said, you can be a social worker and provide great value to society, but don't ever make the mistake that you're going to make much money at it and have the kind of lifestyle and being able to travel and do all these other kinds of things that other people who are doing things where they're earning more money, that's a choice that you make. So what I would say to everybody listening to this is, if you have chosen to be in business and you've chosen not to work for the government or not to work for a social agency or something like that, where the focus isn't in on money, if you've chosen to be in the business of business, then that is the business of business. The business of business is making money. And if you ever get that confused, then you won't ever make much money. And I think that folks need to just get that straight in their own head, that that's okay to do. And the way I like to think about this, Lee, is every time someone gives me a dollar, they're getting 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 times a return on that dollar from what I'm giving to them. No one has ever overpaid me. I've undercharged everybody I've ever gotten as a client. I've undercharged them based on what they got from me. Now, whether they did anything with what they got from me is not my responsibility, but they got more than they paid for. So I don't have any problem with charging people the money, because I really feel like I undercharge everybody. So that kind of helps me with that.
I so get that. I just finished writing a new book that'll be out soon. It's called Reclaim the Magic, How to Manifest Anything You Want. A shameless plug here. And I remember my publisher just gave me the price of the book, which is $16.95. And I opened that email, and I was actually stunned to see the price of $16.95 for the book, because my first thought, Steve, was, oh, my Lord, this took 6 months of my life. You know, I burned the oil at night. I mean, it was editors and people and my staff helping me. The amount of work that went into that book and the information people will acquire from $16.95 blows my mind. And
yeah,
so
if they get one idea, it's worth $16,000 or $160,000 or $16 million. In any of those things, it could be worth that much money to them.
Exactly. And then again, going back to what you were talking about first, is it's always the person who's reading the book or listening to the program or going to a seminar's responsibility to extract what is important. And in a lot of us, you know, speakers and coaches such as you and I, have you and I aren't in that, but we're in that trap of if people didn't take value from what we share, then, you know, we feel bad about it. But we both know we can't force people to read the books. We can't force people to listen to the program. And you certainly can't force people to implement or do, you know, the suggestions. The only thing your job is to really provide your service as fantastically as you possibly can, whether you're providing a tax service or a restaurant, you know, food at a restaurant or, you know, anything that we do, we just do our best. And it's one of those just very strange things in society that's happening now where everything should be free and people who give information, you know, provide information should do it for free. And I could not disagree with that more, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, and if you can, you know, there is some value in an exchange, but I'm not willing to give somebody something for free if they're not at least willing to give me their name and email address. Why should I give them something for free unless they're willing to do that? Because it is a fair exchange.
Like coaching for free. You know, everybody, you and I get hit on all the time, you know, with questions. It's like people, you know, when you go to your lawyer, you pay for your lawyer or your accountant or your doctor, and yet it's often interesting that people feel that, you know, oh, you should coach for free. And, you know, I've learned that every time I've made that mistake and I've given free information away, they never enact on it. They never use it because it was free. They don't value it.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. The more we charge for it, the more they tend to value it. And there's a dynamic there that works with that, and that they really do. We should be charging high fees for what we do, because it's only when we charge a high fee that people take notice and appreciate what it is that we're offering to them. And that I actually find that people respect me more when I charge a higher fee than when I charge a lower fee, which is counterintuitive, but that's exactly how it works. So,
yeah, because the more we pay for something, the more we tend to value it. Yes, for sure.
Absolutely.
So we were on number five. We've got number six next.
Number six is goal achieving. And goal achieving is the ability to identify and prioritize activities that lead to a goal. Now, that predisposes that you got a goal. Now, again, most folks, you know, this whole thing about goal setting is so misunderstood, and so many people have tried it and had a miserable experience with it. The most people resist this whole idea of setting a goal, and which is sort of crazy when you think about it, because the way I like to think about this is I say to folks, you know, if you wanted to go on vacation and you walked up to the airline ticket counter at Delta Airlines and you said to the ticket agent, I would like to buy a ticket to a nice warm destination for vacation. The ticket agent's going to ask you, where would you like that to be? And if you say, I don't know, I just want to go someplace that's really nice and warm, and there are 27 people standing behind you, that ticket agent is probably going to say very politely, why don't you step aside and let me help these other people? And when you make up your mind and tell me where you want to buy a ticket to, I'll be glad to sell you a ticket. Well, most people get that, but that's how most people run their lives. They don't know where they want to go. They have no idea where they want to go. It's fuzzy, it's unclear, and, of course, you can't hit a target that doesn't exist. So superstar salespeople are very clear about where they want to be. They're very clear about the income they want to make. They're very clear about the number of clients they want. They're very clear about what they want their retirement income to look like. If somebody resists doing that sort of thing and sitting down and drawing that out, then they don't have a snowball's chance of ever accomplishing much more than what they accomplish or accomplishing at this point. So extremely important. You can work with somebody. You can work with somebody that will help you do that. But it's if you don't have that as an objective, it's going to be awfully hard to accomplish if you don't have an idea of what it is you want to do. Number seven is, and actually is sort of a seven and a 7A, is customer focus and interpersonal skills. And the customer focus is really the thing where, you know, salespeople get a bad rap, but customer focus is really about a commitment to customer satisfaction. And I know you do, and I do, and everybody I know that is reputable in business really does care about providing great value to the people that do business with them. I don't mind telling people, I really care about my clients. Now, I don't take their problems as my own, and I don't take responsibility for their life, but I do care about them, and I care about them to the extent that I do want to help them improve their life. And I think all really superstar salespeople look at customers, clients, patients as more than just a payday or a commission check. They really do have a sincere interest in wanting to help people. And number seven, the interpersonal skills, sort of goes along with that, which is the ability to interact with others in a positive manner. So I think those things go together. And I think if we, you know, we start, if that's our mindset, if that's who we really are, then it's a lot easier to do some of these other things. But if we don't really care about our customers and we're only self-centered to the extent of what can I get from them, I think you're going to have a hard time selling, because your intention will come out loud and clear, and human beings are so perceptive. They know when they're dealing with someone who is simply out for their own best interest as opposed to wanting to help them. So very critical, very important. Now, I think we all need to, from time to time, take inventory and ask ourselves, you know, am I doing this because it's going to benefit me, or am I doing it because it's going to benefit the people that hire me and work with me? So those are the seven. So everybody take, you know, go back and listen to these. Take a self-inventory. Ask yourself how you're doing on these and which one of these you might need to go to work on.
Absolutely. And I'm so in agreement about the intention thing. I do believe that society is much more perceptive than a lot of people give them credit for. I always feel like I can smell con artists and people who are very self-centered and, you know, just trying to make a commission. You know, their whole focus of the sale is, you know, you can just mentally see them thinking how much money they'll make from the sale. And those people are very transparent. They don't even know they're transparent. So the next question I have, and because we only have a little bit of time left, is how can someone become more effective and better at selling? You know, not only using these things, but, you know, any other tips that you want to share?
Okay. I think it starts, if someone really looks in the mirror and says, I want to get better at selling, I think they really have to do two things internally first. The first one is self-honesty. They've got to do a personal inventory about where they are and what they need to work on. So it's an admission that they need help. It's sort of like an AA. The first step in AA is going to an AA meeting and admitting that you need help. So selling is a lot the same way. There needs to be an honest appraisal that, hey, I need some help. I can't figure this out for myself. And then once somebody has that, they need a commitment. They need to make a commitment for ongoing continuous personal improvement, where they're actually going to go out and work on themselves. So those two things sort of go hand in hand. Once somebody does that, then the most effective way to improve their selling is the same as the most effective way of doing anything if you want to learn a new skill, which is working with a coach. If you wanted to play golf, the best way to do it is go hire a coach and take lessons, as opposed to going out and just hacking around on the golf course on your own. So hiring a coach that's going to help you, that has a demonstrated track record, that can identify your personal things that you need to work on, and continuously coaching and encouraging, sometimes pushing a little bit to get you out of your comfort zone so that you can move forward. And then along with that would be involved in some sort of ongoing support community, because selling is a lonely business and you're going to get beat up quite a bit, and everybody needs a place to go so that they can get encouragement and get back up on the horse and go again. And if somebody really wants to improve in selling, those are the things that would really help them do that.
So the next to the last question I have for you, is there one single thing that would separate sales superstars from the mediocre normal performers, and what is it?
Okay, and everybody's going to relate to this one. Superstar salespeople have what's called a utilitarian value. They have a high utilitarian value. Their number one value is that they want to get paid for what they do. They are not about doing something for free. There was a study done of 600 companies in the U.S. and Germany. The number one salesperson in every one of these companies, 71% of those 600 salespeople that were number one in their companies had this as their number one priority, their number one value, if they will, which was, I want to make money.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, you know, here's the caveat there. The more money I make, the more people I help. I can't make more money without helping more people. So that's perfectly in line with one another. And the people that make the most money in our society are the ones that provide the most value.
Absolutely. I totally believe that. Because if we didn't have really good salespeople, if you just thought of the time and energy and effort that you would have to spend researching products and comparing them and figuring out, you know, what were the best benefits, whereas a really good salesperson, you know, already knows their competitors. And it's amazing how much time people can save you if you get a really good salesperson who is really there to be of service to you. Okay, I know, Steve, that you have something special for our listeners. Share with us what that special thing is.
Okay, great. You mentioned my book in the beginning, the book Profitable Persuasion, Proven Strategies for Sales and Management Success.
That book. It's a very good book.
Yeah, it took me quite a while to write, but it's really some great stuff, some of my best stuff. I'm going to make that available for the folks listening to this. The book is absolutely free. I simply ask folks if they would help me defray the cost of the shipping, which is $5.95, and I'm attaching dollar bills to that book when I send it out, because it costs me more to print it and send it out than $5.95. But I'm making that offer available to your folks. They simply would go to newschoolselling.com/book. So newschoolselling.com/book, and they can actually order that book for free. And I'll be glad to send it to them.
Excellent. And I have read that book, Steve, and I think that's a really very generous offer, and thank you so much for that. I really want to remind everybody that not only are you getting the benefit of actually listening to Steve and all of his wisdom, he has four really fabulous reports that he is sharing with us that I'm going to share with you. One of them is called Are Sales Winners Born or Made? Another one is called Is It Time to Quit Your Sales Job? Another one is Characteristics of Top Performers. And the best prospector always wins. And these are super reports that are going to be made available to you. So not only are you going to be able to listen to this program and the transcript, if you like, which I really recommend that you definitely get the transcript and study it, because there was so much very valuable information that was shared today that can improve your profits. So, Steve Clark, as always, you have been very beneficial, and thank you so much for your time. And we are going to be talking to you guys again next month. So everybody have a great month, and we're going to call it a wrap. So thanks again, Steve.
You're welcome, Lee. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. All right. See you guys next month. Bye-bye.